The Grascals are certainly one of the most highly regarded bluegrass bands in recent memory, and they have a brand new album out on Mountain Home Records. The name of the album is Before Breakfast. We're going to visit with Kristen Scott Benson, a celebrated banjo player with that band and just a friend in general. We'll talk to her about that brand new album, Before Breakfast, and just a little bit about what she's been up to since we last chatted, which was when her last solo album came out. Kristen Scott Benson of the Grascals to talk about Before Breakfast. You're going to enjoy this. I'm really happy to welcome back again one of my favorite guests and one of my all-time favorite banjo players, Kristen Scott Benson. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always nice to talk to you. The last time we talked, you had just released, I think, Stringworks.
I remember the interview well. It was one of my favorites because it's always fun to talk, you know, some banjo-centric stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a great interview. I really enjoyed
Well, you're very kind. So then on the heels of that, we can say this. We can make this announcement that the world knows by now that one of your tunes has been nominated for a recorded instrumental performance. That's Great Water Den. Am I correct on that?
That's right. It sure is.
And I remember that tune got its name from the fact that your son is a big fan of Thomas the Tank Engine.
That's right. Yeah, we named that. One of the Thomas books had a town that it was centered around called Great Waterton. So he and I and Wayne, I mean all three of us, that we would build Great Waterton and then knock it down, and then build it and then knock it down. You know how repetitive everything. So Great Waterton was a daily game for us for a long time, and he just loved the demolition part of the game, and that tune is kind of a reference, and that's where the name came from.
Why are boys like that? Why do they like the demolition part?
It's
I don't know.
Impressive, I tell you.
So that's a great nomination for that tune, and then you're also nominated again for Banjo Player of the Year with IBMA, which congratulations on both.
Well, thanks a lot.
It's a good group, and how many times have you won? I lose track if it takes more than one hand.
I've won four times,
okay.
And one of those was a tie with Ron Stewart, and boy, I'll take that any day.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so there, I wanted to get those out of the way. We're here to talk about the brand new Grascals release. What's the actual release date? I've got it already, but do we have an official release date?
Yeah, September 1st.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going to beat the street date on that one a little bit. Before Breakfast, which is on Mountain Home, and I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and just want to talk to you about some of the music and maybe some changes in the band since the last time we talked about a Grascals album, maybe, and just kind of work into it that way. And you know how this works. It's very informal for me, and I want the artist to feel free to talk about it, and I'll guide you through some things. So let's talk a little bit about the brand new album, Before Breakfast.
Okay. This is the second record that features John Bryan and Adam Haynes, and I think that's one of the most notable things to talk about with Before Breakfast is that, we lost Jamie Johnson, who is, he was absolutely the face and the persona of the Grascals for so many years, and we dearly loved Jamie, and we were all really nervous when he left because he was such a huge part of everything that was going on. And but we just feel like we hit a home run because we found this great young singer from Boone, North Carolina, John Bryan, who has now, it's hard to believe, but he's been here 2 or 3 years. And Adam Haynes is also featured on this record, as he was with the last album. So we had a new lineup on the last two albums. And, I think if there's one thing that I hear in this record that really stands out, it's the evolution of John and the evolution of the trio. Even though they sounded great last time, they had not sung together nearly as long as the few months when we recorded. And boy, you can just tell their trio has really meshed, and they've had a chance to just sing together live so many nights that I'm extremely proud of the vocals on this record. And John's a huge part of that, and we're so blessed and lucky to have him.
It's interesting, Kristen, because I think to the public out here, what I consider my, I've seen you so many times, I don't always rush into the mosh pit, but I'm there a lot. And I've seen you so many times, and I would think that the audience and the public would think, when you guys record, you're like hitting, let's put it this way, to say that you're still evolving, I think, is exciting for a band. The fact that the trio is still evolving and that influences from new members, in this case John, are still developing, it has to be kind of exciting because everything changes.
It does. And, you know, if you look at great artists, and I'm not talking about bluegrass, I'm just talking about any kind of genre, boy, they evolve. And you look at people who you never even know what to expect with the next record because it could be completely different, you know, and it reflects the taste and the interest that they have musically at that point in time. And, you know, we're certainly not going to evolve like that on that kind of scale, but it is our albums are a reflection of the six members' taste as a group. And when you change a couple of those people, when you've got, you know, a third of the band is new, then there is definitely going to be, especially in a situation like the Graspels where it's kind of a band effort, more so than if you just have a band leader and some supporting players, you know, that's a third, you know, that's a big deal when you have a guy like John come in who's interesting because he's super young, he's mid-20s, but his influences predate bluegrass. You know, what he loves is, you know, artists that I've never even heard of, true Appalachian artists that might have influenced people like Ralph Stanley.
Wow.
Those are the people and players and singers that John is most interested in. So that's an entirely new perspective that came in with him. And then with Adam, you know, we got a real veteran with Adam Haynes, even though, you know, he's in his 30s. He played with a lot of different bands, and he brought a lot of experience to the table and a lot of you know, ideas from material to arranging and everything else. So, you know, you got a third of the band that's brand new, and I think it's absolutely reflected in the albums. And sometimes I think it can be healthy for a band. It's easy to kind of get a formula going and just stick with that. And new people can kind of, you know, rejuvenate everybody's interest and you know, just openness to approaching things in a new way.
Isn't that funny that the young guy brings on all these old things? That's odd to hear you say that. And you think, well, everybody takes those little trips down those little back roads and finds what they like. And sometimes we don't go the same roads, but here he's bringing things up, like you say, that may have influenced Ralph Stanley that you didn't even know of. So that's kind of neat.
A lot. Yeah, I've learned a lot from him. Like, he knows all about banjo players. You know, for me, it pretty much started with Earl Scruggs.
Right.
And he can tell you about all these banjo players I've never heard of, and we'll be in the car because he and I travel together, being from the Carolinas in the Nashville each week, and, you know, I'll say, play me something else. And it's really been good for me to get some background on some of these artists that, you know, I've never heard. And being from that area and being, you know, in Doc Watson territory,
yeah.
He's just got a lot of influences that truly are authentic mountain styles, you know, and that's a very different influence than most 25 or 6, however old he is, you know, musicians that you hear today. Their big influences might be the Lonesome River Band, you know, or Third Time Out. That's who they listen to as a kid. He's listening, you know, to people that might have influenced the first generation players. It's really cool.
It is neat. Or their influences could be the Graspels.
I guess the band has been around long enough to do that. In fact, John has made that point several times. That, let's see, I don't know exactly how old the band is, but, you know, he was a young child when the band started. So that makes the three founding members feel good.
Has he come to you and said, I listened to you when I was a kid. My dad took me to one of your concerts.
He could say that to these guys. I mean, he's certainly young enough to be their son. So I think that's and he's the first guy that I've ever traveled with that I felt maternal about. I might not actually be able to be his mom, but It's a different season wife. He's just about to get married, and it's the first time I ever felt myself wanting to mother a bandmate.
Ooh.
That's not happened before, and so we're all getting older.
Let's run through the current lineup of the band on Before Breakfast, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the songs, which are great, but let's make sure everybody knows who's in the band.
Yeah, you have the three founding members, which that would be Terry Eldridge on guitar and lead and harmony vocals, Terry Smith on bass, who also sings lead on one of the songs and harmony as well, and you have Danny Roberts playing the mandolin. Mm-hmm. And then I'm, of course, playing banjo. Adam Haynes is playing fiddle, and John's playing guitar. He actually plays clawhammer banjo on one of the songs and sings lead and harmony as well.
All right, good. When I got the album before I took the plastic off, I thought, wait a minute, here's Sleeping with the Reaper Demons. This is not my Grascals. And I thought, where are these songs going?
I know, that's just kind of a funny turn of events that the first two titles on the record happened to be so dark, but they were just two songs that Elle wanted to sing one, and John fell in love with the first, and those happened to be the first two in the sequence. So we have some dark titles up front.
Well, you do, and of course, when I opened it and listened to it, but you're just looking at the titles, and then I've been redeemed. I said, okay, yeah, we're coming back. I get it now. Then we fall right into the beer tree, and I thought, wait a minute, we're backsliding already. We're only six songs into it. We're backsliding.
I hear you. We have noticed that about the titles.
I love the album. I just let me ask you this. I'm always curious about the process. Now, you've been involved in so many albums, you can probably quickly run through for the listeners. And I'm talking to Kristen Scott Benson about the new Before Breakfast CD that'll come out on Mountain Home. I'm always curious about the process of selecting things that actually get put on an album like Before Breakfast.
Yeah. You know, every band does it differently. And for us, we can all bring songs to the table, but the singers, I think, really are the decision makers, because just like they wouldn't choose an instrumental for us to play, for instance, you know, you have to give them the liberty to sing songs they want to sing and that they believe in. So we're all responsible for bringing songs to listen to, but it really kind of rises and falls with John and Terry Eldridge, and it is just a matter of whether or not they relate to the song and want to sing it. And then Terry Smith also, as I mentioned, sings lead on one of the songs on the record, and he wrote that with his brother. So, you know, we always pull some from within the band, but most of these came from outside, and it's from writers that we know and, you know, some of our friends who just happen to be great songwriters. So we have access to some good material, but every band is different, and certainly the recording process is different, the preparation process varies. For this band, it really is almost like just doing a session, in that, you know, we never prepare, we don't get together and rehearse. I mean, we might even do more of that now than we did in the beginning. In the beginning, I remember going in with the Grascals. I'd only been in the band a month or two, and we went in the studio, we recorded the three songs that they knew they wanted to do, and then they started listening to demos in the studio, and that was certainly brand new to me, because the luxury of a band is that you can be ready ahead of time and, you know, maybe save some studio time and kind of have an idea of what you want to do, and the Grascals have just never been that way, so there have been, you know, innumerable times that we would listen to a demo, say, yeah, let's do it, chart it, and go about it just like you would if you were on, you know, a normal session that wasn't involving a band. That's a little bit different than a lot of groups can do it.
Do you think, Kristen, that's because so many of these, you know, when the Grascals first came about, we're sidemen. We're guys who have been sidemen, and do you think it's because their experience was so great at doing that, at being part of a band and going in the studio and getting out? I mean, you had a lot of experience before this too, but do you think it's from that constantly being in studios?
I'll tell you exactly what I think it is. Terry Smith and Terry Eldridge worked for the Osborne Brothers for so long,
yeah.
And both Terrys have an enormous influence on, you know, the culture of the band and who the Grascals are and how the band operates. And I think that's a lot, is that, you know, that spontaneity, the lack of preparation is almost a hallmark of the Osmond Brothers. If you listen to Sonny Osmond's banjo playing, which I know you and I have spent a lot of time doing, there's a lot of stuff that happens that you can tell he had not planned this. This is what happened off there. He's told me before that he would think about what he was going to play as he drove to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the approach they took to recording. So Terry Smith and Terry Eldridge are geared that way because they spent their 20s and part of their 30s, I would assume, playing for Bob and Sonny.
Uh-huh.
So that's how they went about it. And I think it is, you know, just kind of a trickle-down effect from their experience with the Osmond Brothers. And we listen to songs a lot of times in the van or, you know, we might get together before a show and listen because you do have to, it is unwise to spend studio time, extensive studio time, trying to choose songs. And we've certainly done that. This time we at least knew the 12 songs we were going to do, even if we hadn't even played them together. We knew which 12 they were. Everybody had access to the demos. So, you know, there was at least a familiarity with the songs, even if they weren't rehearsed necessarily.
Well,
and I really think it comes from Bob and Sonny.
Yeah, they didn't like to mess around in the studio. You know that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, 2-3 cuts top.
Yeah.
And that's also the grand. I mean, we cut all the tracks in one day.
I was going to ask you, really, one day?
In a day.
Wow.
And the instrumentalists, the lead guys, me and Adam and Danny, did fixes after that. But, in other words, Terry Eldridge, Terry Smith, they cut the tracks, they're done, and they're out of there. So, you know, it's certainly not a long, drawn-out process with these guys.
You mentioned Terry Smith and his brother Billy. They wrote and Terry sings "Lonesome," which is on the album. So we know where that mm-hmm. came from. We talked about that a little bit. "Sleeping with the Reaper," the title cut is. I don't know Grant Williams. Of course, I know Becky Buller, but and you mentioned. I think you said Terry. Was it Terry that favored that song?
No, actually, that one came from me.
Oh, okay.
Grant Williams happens to be my very best friend from college.
Oh, okay.
And. And he's a really cool musician. He's not a bluegrass musician. In fact, the only his introduction was to bluegrass was through me in college. And so he's such a talented guy, though, that he can just sort of set out with a mission. Like, I'm going to write a song about this. I want it. And he can do that. Mm-hmm. And I just think the world of him. And I also love Becky Buller. I just think the world of her as a human being and certainly as a writer and player and singer. So I connected those two and just said, hey, Grant, she's great. Becky, he's great. You
did
guys
you?
Need to get together.
Did you really?
And
it was an arranged, so
yeah.
You arranged their meeting.
I did. And they ended up writing Sleeping with the Reaper. And Grant is also, he wrote a couple of the songs on string work. He wrote Sink or Swim.
Okay.
And he wrote and sang Till the Day Breaks.
Okay.
On that album.
I should have gone back and looked at that, and I would have remembered his name again. I just forgot.
Yeah, no, that's great. So he's not a bluegrass guy. You know, the influence that he's just one of these people that has a knack for being able to nail whatever he sets out to do. So if he wants to write, you know, a contemporary Christian song about a certain scripture, he can kind of do that. And he kind of fell in love with bluegrass in college when he heard it. I remember him saying, so the upbeat, the percussive sound, one instrument's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, it's the mandolin.
Yeah.
So that's where he started. Yet he went to a bluegrass show, heard a band live, and thought, I'm going to write a bluegrass song, and I think that was Sink or Swim. So
Jeez. He's
just a really talented guy, and we all know how talented Miss Becky Buller
is.
Yeah,
I like Becky.
I was so glad they got together and we ended up with one of the songs from that meeting.
It worked. It's kind of a spooky song, but it works out really good. I like it a lot. I've already played that tune, by the way, in one of the programs since I got this. I put that in the lineup. So it's already aired on Unreal Bluegrass, so it will more. But then Demons is written by Bill Anderson and John Randall, so that's where'd you find that one?
Well, this was all Terry Eldridge. I mean, he just loved that song and brought it up several times in the van while we were traveling. And, you know, really just, again, Terry Eldridge is such an emotional singer. He has to believe in the song. He has to relate to it and want to sing it. And you can't force songs on him. You know, he has to... he has to feel it. And this is a song that just really touched him. And he just insisted we do it from the very beginning as soon as we start talking about material. So that's all him. And I felt like he really delivered it with a lot of emotion and heart, which is what he does.
The skip around just a little bit. Pathway of Teardrops, of course. You guys always managed to find a way to put an old Osborne Brothers tune on just about everything I've heard recently that you put out.
Yeah, I don't think the band will ever do one.
No. I think it's in your contract.
Because we love them so much.
Oh, they're so great.
Yeah, they're great. And, you know, the trio is, I think the three guys sound great on that cut. And it's dangerous when you do a song like that because the bar was set so high with the original cut, but I was proud of them. And I mean, you do have two guys who sang for years and years with Bob and Sonny. So Terry Eldridge sang that third part, and then when he left, Terry Smith did. So they both were a part of that trio. And you certainly hear a strong Osborne Brothers influence on everything we do, but I certainly foresee, you know, there being an Osborne Brothers song on
I think you have. I think it would break tradition if you didn't put at least one on every album.
Right.
By now it's probably a good luck. You know, if you don't do it, you might be like, you know, doing some evil show business.
Yeah.
Lynchburg Chicken Run follows that. That's the only instrumental, correct, that I hear on the album? Is that the only one that's full-fledged instrumental?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's a tune Danny and Adam wrote, and it's named after there's this convenience store in Lynchburg, Virginia, where when we were still on a bus, we just pulled in, and some of the guys got some chicken, and they loved it. Oh, my goodness, it's the best from this convenience store, but it's the best chicken in the world. So we played in Appomattox, Virginia, just a year or two ago, and they sought it out. Like, they had pinned it on Google Maps to remember where this convenience store was, and we went out of the way to go get some of the chicken from this convenience store, and we called ahead so they could make a lot of it and feed everybody. So that they got the title idea from that, and it's it must obviously be in Lynchburg, Virginia, but I think we were playing in Appomattox when we took that excursion.
Sometimes you just got to do that. You know, and I can't, you guys, you spend so much time on the road, and I know that you try to get home as much as you can, but I would think things like that on the road kind of stick in your mind if that's something that you really want to, that you enjoyed it. You have so many different eating and non-eating opportunities that you may not like, but if you find one, I would say, you know, go back and stick a pin on the map. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and what's so funny about it, I mean, I try to, you know, I eat pretty healthy. And it's just certainly not healthy. I mean, this is as fried and as greasy as you can possibly get. So you'd think that it would be this real eccentric thing that would warrant a pin on Google Maps. No, it was a convenience store fried chicken place that you know, just got the guy so excited. So I'm sure if you're in that area, they'll make a point of going back.
Hey, is this the Chicken Run? This is the Grasshoppers. We want 1,000 pieces, and we'll be there in 2 hours.
They called ahead, and I think we got about 50 pieces.
Oh, my gosh.
It was unbelievable. It was crazy.
We talked a little bit about Beer Tree, which is just, that's going to be something that you're going to hear in parking lots, I think, once people get a hold of Beer Tree.
Again, that's Terry Eldridge.
Mm-hmm.
It's Harley Allen's song, and just like we've always done awesome other songs, the band's never done a record without Harley Allen having at least one song. And, of course, we lost Harley a few years ago, but he has this wealth of material that's just amazing. And Elle fell in love with that one as well and just had to do it. And it's a really funny song.
It is funny.
It's just a funny thing that you can't help but laugh at.
It is. It's a great, and it's one that's going to stick in your head, too, I think, once people hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Delia, I know John Weisberger very well. I also know Charles R. Humphrey III, bass player with Steep Canyon. I don't know Charlie Chamberlain, and so the third cut is Delia, and I don't know who Charlie Chamberlain is, but I know the other two guys fairly well.
Yeah, and this, again, goes kind of back to John's heart, because it he played claw hammer banjo, and even though it's a new song, it certainly sounds like it has an old-time feel about it. And, again, it just sort of makes you, you know, we have the couple of darker songs at the beginning, but there are a lot of cuts on this record that are very light and just, you know, not going to make you ponder the world's problems. They're just going to make you feel good.
Right, oh, yeah.
This is one of those tunes.
And the tune right after that, I've been redeemed, and I would also say he took your place, and there is there as you is that am I thinking those? Let's see, I have to look at my notes.
Yeah, no, those are all three dots.
That's right. I put red crosses by the title.
Yeah, there that's a good system.
That's right.
Yeah, but those three are all gospel, and they're what I would call overtly gospel.
Yes.
Like a lot of the songs that the Grasshoppers have done might have a positive message.
They might be they might be inspirational, but these are clearly gospel.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I get you.
Mm-hmm. Boy, these are just straight down the middle. I mean, He Took Your Place is a Flat and Scruggs tune.
Yeah.
But I've Been Redeemed and is new, and There Is You is new, and they are very clearly gospel, and that's kind of new for us. Again, you know, John's influence, he loves that three-quarter time, old-time feel, and then Terry Eldridge, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Danny heard Elle sing He Took His Place at a funeral, perhaps.
Oh, really?
Said, boy, that, you know, I forgot about that song. Great song, you sang it great, we should record that. And then There Is You is written by one of the Flat Lonesome
Kelsey.
Singers, Kelsey mm-hmm. Harrigill.
So, yeah.
She wrote that, I think, maybe perhaps with John in mind to sing it. So we do have three gospel songs on the record, which we've never done, and they're three very overtly gospel songs.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. I knew I put crosses, and I don't mean X's. I put red crosses as I'm taking my notes because I wanted to go back to those, and that's a good way. Overtly gospel is good. Then you come back. You guys you're building steam. You're past the demons and the reapers, and now you end it with Clear Corn Liquor.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. We kind of jump all over the place.
Yeah.
Tim Stafford wrote this song.
I saw that.
And we loved it. You know, I am a big Tim Stafford fan, and so I'm going to be game for anything. He has a part of just because I like what he does so much. But again, this to me I love Delia and I love this song. They both have that lightness about them
mm-hmm.
that makes you feel good. That just it just brings about this you know, this sense of fun and community and conversation and just having a good time. And both of those songs convey that, I think.
Oh, I think so.
And just the tone of the song as a whole. So we ended up finishing the record up with Clear Corn Liquor. Which Elle sings lead on, and of course it's got a lot of whiskey before breakfast in it.
Yeah,
off of that instrument.
Yeah, I heard the melody and some of the stuff you were playing. I thought that's what it was. So that's great. So let me ask you this: okay, you pick out 12 songs. You go and you do them in a day. The lineup on the albums. How much consideration goes into, for example, you're going to end with Clear Corn Liquor? How the lineup of how you're going to do them? Once you've got 12, how do you figure out what you're starting and what you're ending with?
Yeah, you know, I don't have, I didn't have much input into that. I'm not sure exactly how much of that is the label's decision, how much is the, you know, maybe a couple of guys in the band are involved in that, but we don't certainly record with a sequence in mind.
Okay.
And I think that just gets, because for one thing, it's hard to predict what the songs are really going to be. You know, you look at them and you hope that it's balanced. Like, we don't want, you know, we have two guys that sing lead. We don't want one guy singing eight and one guy singing two, for
mm-hmm.
instance. You know, we pay some attention to that. You pay attention a little bit to keys maybe tempo, certainly you would consider. So you look at it as a whole, but it's not something that you think about ahead of time sequence-wise. And it's hard to predict what it's going to be. You can't say what the mood shifting from one song to the other will be until you actually hear the finished cut. So that happens very much at the end of the process. And it's certainly a, I think that the label has a lot to to say about that. They have the songs that they have emphasized.
My tiny infinitesimal way to relate to that is when I lay out a program for Unreal Bluegrass and I put all these great songs, I think they're all great. They are all great. And as I listen, as I put the show together and I go through it all, they're all great, but then I'll notice, like, after three or four, I need to change the tempo because I've inadvertently not done that in a while. Not just for the effect, but I just want to hear it. So I move things. I'm constantly, even as I'm recording a program to be sent out, I'm always moving things around and adding things and taking things out.
Yeah.
And I think it's just what you hear. You know what it is in your head, but when you hear three or four in a row, you're thinking, I'm going to put something different in there. Not because the one I have selected is bad. I just need to change it around a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, a lot of times the way a listener connects to a record, it's kind of a shame with the way everybody streams and the way you divide just a song at a time. You've taken a lot of the effect away from listening to a record from start to finish. Hardly anybody does.
I hate that that's true, and it is, but I love the album. I want to hear it from beginning to end and just over and over and over in that sequence. That's a shame.
Yeah, and, you know, certainly there are some people who, you know, they have a vision for their album, and they intentionally, it's a concept record maybe. I mean, you know, they have a very clear idea of how they want it to hit people. And when you just pick and choose what you listen to, it's an entirely different experience.
Yeah, you're right.
None of us did that when we were listening to music as kids and young people. We listened to it all.
Right. Right. Well, I think it's a great album, Before Breakfast on Mountain Home. And Kristen, thanks so much for stopping by. I always enjoy talking to you. We'll swap sunny stories at another time, and we'll go through some of the things that you know him better than me, I think. I know him fairly well, but...
You certainly do. He's a precious man, and we both love him and know him, and we're blessed and lucky.
I agree. I'd do anything for him in the world. He said, I told him the other day, you're going to be on the show. He said, tell her it's a great album. He loves everything about it. He really likes this album a lot. And he doesn't say that about everything. I won't even say he doesn't say it about every Grascals album. He loves what you guys do, but he thinks this is an exceptional album.
Yeah, and his seal of approval means so much to us. I can't think really of anybody that Terry Eldridge and Terry Smith care too much about as far as their opinion of albums, but they care about what Sonny thinks, and I certainly do. I tend to care what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
Those guys are selective, and Sonny's maybe the one guy that they're really interested in his thoughts when we do an album, and, you know, I dearly love Sonny, and... If you're lucky enough to be one of the people that can be close to him, he's such a blessing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Kristen Scott Benson, I'll let you go. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk with us on Unreal Bluegrass. And I'll see you in Raleigh because you're going to go down there and probably see how you come up on the awards process. And you know, really being nominated at this point is great. But I love Great Waterton. And as soon as I heard Stringworks, I thought this is Banjo Player of the Year material.
Oh, well, that's very kind, and I do appreciate it very much, and thank you for having me tonight.
All right. I'll see you later, Kristen.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right.